Welcome back to the Martial Arts Show 2.0. I'm your podcast host, Khalid, and my guest today is Michael Mason, and we talk about his journey into fitness, health, the carnivore diet, some tips and advices for the people, how to be stronger, martial arts, bodyguard experience, and many more things. Stay tuned.
Perfect. There he is. Hello, sir. Hey. How are you doing? Hope everything
is
good.
Yeah, I'm good.
That's awesome. Appreciate you for taking the time. And yeah, I would just say, we can start. Tell people who you are and a little bit about your background.
Okay, so I'm Michael Mason. I'm 58. I live in the UK. I used to live in Switzerland. I've been following a carnivore or carnivore-type way of eating for a fairly long time. My journey into, let's say, wellness, health, fitness, strength, pretty much started when I was like 22. So I've done a lot of things, all in the pursuit of just being optimal as a human being. I work as a bodyguard, fully qualified Swiss ski instructor, strength and conditioning coach. I've trained in martial arts for since I was a kid, trained in Japan, I've trained in Israel.
That's awesome.
I have a wide range of experience with coaching, teaching, and also, you know, understanding the body,
yes,
or at least my body. And also my head as well, and how food affects how we are as, you know, how we are physically, mentally,
yes,
and how that impacts everything else, sleep, the whole gamut.
Yeah, that's definitely awesome. That's right here. All the things you say is like my type of guy. I like that when people like that. You remind me of Tony Blauer. I don't know if you know him. He created the Spear System, how to manage fear and, you know, self-defense. He was also teaching a lot and tactical stuff and everything. He's 60, and he's like same guy like you. So that's why I really like the people from combat martial arts background. It's awesome.
Well, I know Tony. A couple of my friends used to be some of the head instructors with him. I think three or four courses with Tony. I actually did one in, it was in Germany. We did one in Germany. I can't remember, Dachau. I think it was near. And it's funny because the restaurant I stayed at, the hotel that I stayed in was, it was owned by these people who liked hunting. And it was a little bit weird, but anyway. So,
that's awesome. So, it's really cool because it's very important, you know, martial arts and self defense and just for your self esteem and everything. But before we go in all these details and all of that, like you said, your journey started as a kid. You start with martial arts. So how was it for you? Did you do any other sports as a kid, like football or anything else?
So I did sports as a kid, and then, and I can tell you the date, it was 1973. That was when Enter the Dragon came out. I was nine. And the other famous program was Kung Fu with David Carradine. And it was screened on a Friday night here in the UK once a week. There was no downloads, there was no box sets.
You couldn't
watch the whole thing over a weekend. You had to wait for the week. And as a nine-year-old, I saw this, and it was like, this was like the greatest thing ever. And, you know, I enrolled into a karate club here. And I loved everything, you know, I loved everything about it. And, you know, you've got to remember, then we didn't have the internet. We didn't have the level of info and bombardment that we have now. There was no electronic toys and video games and everything. So this as a kid was just empowering, because, you know, we looked at these guys, you know, I know it was all for television, and but we looked at all these guys like you know, Bruce Lee, and just thought like wow, these were super human. And just the mystique of, you know, training in China or Japan, it was like, you know, that was my dream. And, you know, luckily enough, I've been very fortunate in that I was able to follow my dream and train with the Grandmaster in Japan over years and years and years. And so I accomplished part of my dream.
Yeah,
And
that's
yeah, I played, and
incredible.
yeah, I mean, I played, I played other, I played other sports, and the karate then became into like full contact karate. Before it was called kickboxing, it was called full contact karate, and I did, and I just followed and pursued stuff. So yeah.
That's awesome. So basically, almost like your whole life, you were always active, probably since you can remember, always did something, always moving, and then obviously the martial arts background, and then from there on, everything step by step, you improve, you did different things.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't always been, like a good boy. I had a period of, in my teens where, let's call it, I was I was a bit of a bad boy and what have you. And that's so, and that's what I mean. So like from like 22, it was like that was the start of my, I would say my real journey. That's when I stopped drinking. I mean, I've been teetotal for 36 years. That's when I stopped taking any type of chemical, drugs, etc., etc. And
That's
so
great.
that's been like part of like the like my journey.
Yes, but that's awesome. I mean, you still did it pretty early. I mean, a lot of most people probably they don't stop drinking until they're in the 30s or 40s, and I mean, living a very clean lifestyle over 36 years is definitely amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I suppose luckily, in one way, all the crap was condensed into a short period. I didn't have to sort of like do, carry on for decades and decades and decades, and then get to like, have this like midlife crisis that people, if they actually get there, and saying, yeah, my life is shit, blah 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 blah. It hasn't been perfect since then, but it's just, it's been a journey.
Yeah, that's really awesome. What other martial arts did you do after the, obviously, like you said, from karate, full contact slash kickboxing? Anything else you did?
So I studied Krav Maga. I learned Krav Maga before anyone knew what Krav Maga was. I was one of the first UK instructors,
Oh, that's interesting.
which was like, this was, and this was because we had to get insurance, and so my insurance certificate, and I still have like the license, was from 1993. And then it was starting to come, it was starting to come through what Krav Maga was. So I studied that. I became instructor in that. I learned that in Israel. I've done Aikido. I've learned Tai Chi, Qigong, various forms of Jiu-Jitsu. I studied Ninpo, Tai Jitsu in Japan. And that really was my main, martial art. And then bringing it all together in terms of like, how then do you take some of the good essence of this to show people how to look after themselves? Because a lot of people don't have 10 years to learn a technique and everything. Want to look, they come to you, it's like, well, how can I be safe when I walk out of here tonight? And that to me was always, that to me was always one of the issues. And that's why Tony was so good, because he created that sort of bridge. So whatever you did before, whatever martial art, whether it's boxing, wrestling, whatever it was, people didn't know how to sort of translate that for the person who wasn't doing that to walk in the street and be sort of safe. So yeah, it's like people like that who were able to. So I'm grateful for his teachings and his knowledge.
I mean, that's definitely very important, especially managing fear, because that's an issue a lot of people have. Like, you can train and have good punches and kicks and grappling, whatever, but then in the street, if a situation comes, you're not prepared. Suddenly somebody screams really loud and aggressively in your face, and you're like, oh, I'm not used to that. So that's why it's very important to deal with that.
Well, people don't know. People don't, and I would say especially men. Men just like say, "Oh, I don't." They're scared to admit that they're frightened. They're scared to admit that they're shitting themselves. They're scared to admit, I've got fear. And I suppose we're all brought up in a way like that. But it's how you, even the greatest, fighters in the world like Tyson, they would all talk about fear.
They
But
have
it
the
was
most
how.
fear, yeah.
How they it was how they managed it. If we didn't have fear, as human beings, we wouldn't have survived.
Yeah, that's true.
There was a famous experiment. I read it on a book about breathing, and it was a pretty nasty experiment. And Tony talks about this, but this is an experiment where they took the amygdala from monkeys' brains out, and the monkey then had no fear, and they just thought then that the monkeys, it wasn't a very nice experiment.
Yeah,
they thought that because the monkeys had no fear, that they would survive, but they didn't, because they had no fear. They didn't recognize a predator.
Yes.
So they would go up to like the predator and say, "Oh, how'd you do?" And like, pop, dead, finished, gone. So we have to have fear. Fear is part of our human involvement and survival. It's how we manage it. It's understanding it, and it's also accepting it. And it's like, you know, and I think, fear isn't fear isn't there to stop us. It's just there to make us aware of the situation. It's not there to stop us in the tracks, because if we wouldn't do anything.
True.
We wouldn't cross the road. We wouldn't get in a car. We wouldn't go into a park. We wouldn't go out at night. You know, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, that's very important. I mean, GSP talks a lot about, he was probably one of the first MMA fighters, like 10, 12 years ago. He talked openly in press conference that he's extremely afraid. And when he talked to his coach before the fight starts in the locker room, he's extremely nervous. But he's one of these guys, as soon as he's in the cage is locked and it's go time, something switches and he shines and, you know, has the best skills and everything, because he knows how to manage and control that. I think that the same was with Mike Tyson.
And I think, with fighters, with sports people, there's a lot of potential in terms of coaching, of how they deal with that immediate pre-fight, pre-race, how to deal with that with their breath, because a lot of times they're not taught about that, and you know they're not taught about how to breathe properly, how to functionally breathe. That's going to sort of like, you know, calm you down. Or at least get you more prepared. Saying that, some people want that feeling of, you know, the heart's going blah 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 blah, because they're understanding why the body is preparing itself.
Yeah.
It's preparing itself for fight and flight. This is a good thing. You know, it's like, okay, because I've got all this the heart rate is elevated, I'm shaking, the blood is being drawn from the skin to go to the organs. You know, once you understand that, understanding it and actually sort of like accepting when it's actually happening is, there's a gap. But the more you practice of just getting used to that, the more, So, but I think there's potential within coaching, because I don't think breath work. It's really taught that well.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And one of the guys who really experienced that, or also actually developed a tool with the doctor, is Bas Rutten, when he developed with the doctor the O2 trainer. It's like how to breathe the proper way, using your diaphragm and not breathing from here, from neck and everything. Yep. And it's not just good for the core, but it really helps to control, especially with people who have asthma and stuff like that. So it definitely helps a lot.
Well, it helps to get oxygen out of the hemoglobin into the tissues, and that is the problem that most people have. People have plenty of oxygen in the system, in the blood.
Yeah.
But getting it from the blood to the tissues is another process. So when people are sort of breathing really, really high up, that's just going to make it even worse. So they're going to get more. Yeah.
That's why it's very important to control it. But I think you probably manage it very well. And I mean, with all the experience you have with coaching, with the time, you figure out the right way how to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, with all the training that I did, I've trained what I consider, the best people, the top people in everything that I've done. And you know, even when I was learning like qigong, see the standing, you know, the standing pose, no one really ever told me or never really explained about the correct way to breathe and why we're doing that. A lot of people want to keep that sort of, they want to keep the truth held in that mysticism, and so people are then drawn to sort of, oh, it's, you know, all this woo-woo shit. But if you take all this woo-woo stuff, it's just it's really simple. I learned transcendental meditation in 1986, you know, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed that whole process of, you know, in 1986, doing meditation was seen as a bit sort of like,
Yeah,
but
weird.
again, we weren't told how to breathe. It was always just focus on the mantra, in the hope that, you know, you would naturally learn, you would naturally teach yourself how to breathe. And again, there's opportunity there, but no one has ever told me about breath work, or, you know, at least how to breathe optimally.
That's true. Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I mean, same for me. I really learned to control it when I had Dr. Belisa Vranish on my podcast. She's the one who developed the O2 trainer with Bas Rutten, and then you can do the breathing IQ with her, and it's like four levels from A to D, and all of the people, even when they have D, within 2 weeks you learn to get to an A to manage that, and that O2 trainer really helps to control it, to learn it the right way. That's why I think it's very, very important. I also saw you are, or you were, at least over 30 years into tactical, you know, or combative, you know, training. So how did you get into that, and how was it for you training all these people and all that experience?
So I was brought up in a small community, and that community, we learned how to protect ourselves. That was just, you know, it was part. So from, you know, from, you know, from a young age, it was. It's basically what, you know, it's basically what we do. You know, I have a Jewish background, and, you know, come from a Jewish community, and so, you know, forever,
Me too,
you
me.
know, we've always done things to protect our local community, et cetera, et cetera. And so my training and experience at first, came from that. And then it sort of evolved into some more security, more, so to say, serious type security, bodyguarding, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something a lot of people, you know, like to learn, or they like that experience, because obviously that gives you something you will always remember for the rest of your life, and you know how to deal with that. Because for us in Europe, I don't know exactly how the rules are in the UK, but here in Germany, you're not allowed to have weapons unless it's a specific reason, or you're working as a police officer, stuff like that. And obviously in America, people when they're 21, they have access to that. So I don't know how it is in the UK, but especially I think here for us in Europe, it's not good to have no experience with that, not to train it, not allowed to train and to deal with that.
But the training, I mean, we're not allowed to have weapons in the UK, but the training is not about what you do when it happens. The training is learning, you know, as a bodyguard, it's learning to see the signs, to see it before it happens.
Being
You know,
aware of them.
my job as a bodyguard isn't to get into a fight. If I'm looking after a client, it's to see the potential risks before, so I can then make a judgment. Where do we go from here? Do we go left? Do we go right? Do we go back? Do we go, what do, you know, what do we do? Microsecond, whether we're driving, whether I'm, you know, look after clients in Switzerland when we're skiing. Nothing has ever happened there. But when you're, you know, and I always use this, you know, example. I'm taking a group of skiers. Nothing to do with security. My job is to get them from point A to
To point,
point B,
yeah.
top of the mountain, bottom A, safely. You know, it's to see all the risks. It's to see, you know, the people coming in off the off piste. The people, because most people don't look.
True, yeah,
You
they
know,
don't
or, you know,
recognize
or, you
things.
know, or all those little choke points, like you get in the road. see things before they happen, so I can then make a call. Okay, we'll go this way. Follow me. We go this way. So, you know, if you're looking after a group of kids or you're looking after a group of adults, okay, to them I'm the ski instructor, but I'm also their bodyguard. You know, that's
kind of
what
I'm doing.
The end of the day, the parents of these kids, they want me to bring their kids home safe, in one piece. You know,
well, definitely.
They may be crying and stuff like that, but well, we hate him, but have you made us do this? He made us do that. But I don't care about that.
It's true. At the end of the day, it's your duty and job to bring them safe home. So, yeah, definitely very true. When did you start to combine strength training with martial arts? Did you start with 22 when you said, okay, now completely focus on health? Or did you do that before?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, the two go together.
Of course, 100%.
You know, if... You know, there's plenty of people who can look really, really good. You know, their technique is, but there's no power behind it. You know, and, you know, you have to be, you know, it's as simple as it. You have to be tough. You have to have resilience. When you're doing a martial art that has a lot of throwing, that you're being thrown around all day long like a sack of potatoes, you need to be strong. The more muscle that you have, the more the bones can sort of accept it is the wrong word, but if you understand, you know what I mean. So, you know, if you want to have a strong kick, well, of course I'm going to practice 1,000 kicks, but if I can squat heavy,
and then do that,
I can develop a whole load more power because I don't want to do 1,000 kicks on you. I just want to do one kick and you're going to go down. I want to do one punch and you're going to go down. So the more, you know, if I'm pressing, you know, doing a bench press or shoulder press, that's the same movement as a punch.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, if I'm doing some sort of like pulling, you know.
It's the same, like you throw someone over the shoulder,
That's pulling you and throwing you. And kicking is squatting, deadlifting. You know, so for me, I always understood that it came together, and you know, everyone who I ever trained with would understand that it was part and parcel of it. You know, you people think that you can get strong just by doing the arm or the you know, sprinters don't just sprint; they spend time in the gym. Skiers don't just become great skiers. They go, you know, top. They're in the gym. Tennis players, they're in the gym, especially now. Like maybe in the 70s, it wasn't like that.
Only skill, but
you know, I mean, you know, they all used to smoke and go out drinking. I think it was more fun then as well. But now, everyone is in the gym.
No, because I'm just asking because obviously, as you know, in that time, I mean, when you're a kid, it's different. Nobody puts you into weights. But let's say, I can imagine probably as soon as you were 18, you probably start lifting weights. Because back then, a lot of people in the 70s and even 80s, they, especially with martial arts, they just did the martial arts exercise, maybe some push-ups and bodyweight squats, and that's basically it. But obviously, like you said, these days, it's... everybody knows that you need to do both because it goes hand in hand.
I mean, I've been at seminars and I've run the, let's say the warm-ups in the seminars, martial arts seminars. And, you know, in front of me, because in the front is all like the higher grades, you know, the white belts at the back, all the black belts and what have you. And, you know, it's sad when these guys who've got their black belts and what have you, they can't do a push-up. Because if you can't do a push-up, you can't punch. I'm sorry, but you have to have some strength. You have to be fit. You have to be fit and strong. If you're going to wear a black belt, if you're going to be a teacher yourself, you've got to be an example. And you know, like me, you see stuff on Instagram, on wherever, and you just think, are these guys for real? With all their, they've got the black belts with all their little gold stripes that just carry on. So they're like, how many is that? You know, 33. And it's like, but you can't do anything. So, I'm old school. When I started, I used to walk in, and I wanted to be scared. I wanted to be scared by the guys who were on the front row, because that meant I've got someone to look up to. So I want to be like that guy. I don't want to walk into, and I've walked into places and I think, well, and it's not me being big headed or not, but it's like, you know, you can take everyone out in the room. I want to go in and be sort of scared. I want to be sort of like amazed. Think like, shit, this guy's.
That's true. I definitely know what you mean, because for us it was the same with my Muay Thai coach. We, especially when we're kids, I mean, still to this day, but especially when we're kids, because he's 6'3", he's heavyweight, weighs like 245, 250. And as a kid, we always knew, okay, like this guy, like everybody is afraid of him. He's extremely nice and such a great person. But, you know, like when shit escalates, you know, he can flip things very easy. Because, and he also always did weight training, but at the same time, he was very explosive in all the martial arts skills. And we always look, still to this day, look up to him, because he can move like a lightweight, but still has the power like a heavyweight. And I think always, like, that's basically the go-to, how you want to be.
Yeah. And, you know, and for me, it's like, I just want to continue, get, not just maintaining, but just to be...
Continue
getting... improving just as, you know, as a human being. I mean, I think that's what my journey is. But I want to be stronger. You know, I'm 58, you know, I'll be 60 in less than a year and a half. I'm looking forward to having on my Instagram tag, fit at 60.
Yes, that's awesome.
I want to be badass at 60, at 70. You know, it's like, I want someone to walk in the room and when I'm 87 and they think, well, don't fuck with him. You know, this is just in my, you know, or 102. I don't see any reason.
Why not? Yeah.
You know, I want to continue to ski at, you know, a high level. You know, I know how I eat, how I train is really, really good for me. It's really good for my physical structure and also my mental, let's call it mental health.
Yeah, no, that's definitely so important, and it's definitely a great goal to have. Because I also saw a couple of months ago a video from Chuck Norris. He's 81, he was still punching the heavy bag and pretty, you know, still fast for that age, and with good technique, obviously, and power. And like when I look around in my street, just all the neighbors who are 70, 80 plus, they can barely move, and then you see a guy like him still doing it. So yeah, definitely very impressive, and hope we can all be like this later.
Exactly.
How do you train these days? Because I see you train very heavy. I mean, I really like your garden gym. It's awesome. You train a lot of kettlebells. Obviously, it gives you a lot of strength. Joe Rogan also does that all the time. But how do you train?
Very intuitively. I don't have a program, but I know the basics very, very well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I know, you know, so within a week, I do a squat. I do a deadlift. I do some form of pressing, maybe twice.
Mm-hmm.
How I put it all together, just really, just you know how I feel. I try to make it not so much interesting for me, but it's almost like I try and fool myself.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if I had this program, I'm going to do heavy deadlifts three times this week. You know, I just try and fool myself. So, and also, I don't really want to batter myself anymore. I just want to do enough, keep it intense, keep it short. Play around with stuff, you know, things that sort of, you know, I can lose confidence, you know, like really, really easy. Things like, you know, even like doing box jumps or certain thing or knee jumps. You know, I just want to have the ability where I know that I can just go straight into it.
Yeah.
I want the ability so I know that I can just go and pick up a heavy deadlift bar without having to sort of warm up, because I know my positioning, my form is really, really good, because this is everyday stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if there was someone in the street and we had to lift them up because they've fallen down or they've been injured, etc. You know, I've had to carry people on my shoulders and ski back down with them because they've been injured, etc.
Yeah. It's true. You need to be ready for that.
And so that may have been sort of like, perhaps I wouldn't do it, you know, again, you know, perhaps it, because it's, you know, it's sort of like danger, but sometimes you have no option. Sometimes there is, so I just want to be strong so I can do whatever anything happens to me during the day, you know, I can do.
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, I've got to warm up, or, you know, let's take it from a martial artist perspective, you know, if I got into a fight or someone attacked me, which is very unlikely to happen, yeah. I don't want to say to them, excuse me, I need to warm up here. I need to do a few squats. Yeah, I need to do a few leg stretches. You know, I've got to be ready to go if I have to run. Yeah. So my training is, you know, it's generally very short. It's very intense. I always focus on whatever I do, good form. So I do a lot of band work, and band work is probably one of the most underestimated parts of training, but it has to be done with good form. If if the form is shit, it's shit. That's it.
True. Yeah.
And with anything that we do, with anything that, you know, you've got to have good form. True. So that's really about you know my training. I've got a lot of equipment. I've done a lot of training over the years. So, you know, I can play around. I don't do stupid things.
Yeah.
Sometimes
sure.
I do. Sometimes you know. Sometimes well, I do, like, can I do this? That's the stuff I don't film.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Sometimes you have to test it as well. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it's my research and development.
Yeah, and then in secret you train that as long as you can until you manage how to do that, and then you can film it. That's how we have to do it sometimes. Yeah, yeah.
People, I don't want to show people the shit.
Yeah, sure, of course. But you're also very strong. I mean, your shape is incredible. Like people can see, how much do you weigh right now? Because I'm sure a lot of people are probably interested in that.
Around 80 kilos.
So like 78, between 78 and 80 kilos probably.
Yeah, between 70, you know, I don't weigh myself. I mean, I must weigh myself to know that I'm around 80 kilos. So, I mean, I weighed myself a few weeks ago. Which is like, it's normally around 80, just under 80 kilos.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely good. I mean, you know what to do. Your shape is awesome. So yeah, that's perfect. It's not always about the weight. A lot of people focus too much on that.
But I think if we did, but the BMI, because I'm not very tall, you know, I'm quite short. I think with my BMI, I'm considered
would say too much, more than 26.
Or even obese. And it's like, right, okay.
Yeah, there you go. That's why that's difficult, because the BMI is like 26 is the, you know, it's the limit. And if you hit that or more, then you basically call obese. But obviously, let's say somebody's 5'7", 5'8", and they weigh 80 kilos, 175, 177 pounds. And like, then you're basically obese for that. But yeah, that's why just
I'm
go
a fat
with the
fucker.
Picture.
Yeah.
But I don't know, but your shape is definitely great. Somebody said, can you tell us more about your wolf dog?
Yeah, well, he's a Czechoslovakian wolf dog. Mm-hmm. He'll be 7 in October. He's an amazing dog. He can do anything.
That's great.
You know, I ski with him. I climb mountains with him. He's a one person dog. Mm-hmm. So it's not everyone's type of. He's very good with other dogs. He has a raw meat diet. He's just an incredibly intelligent, sensitive, can read people's emotions from 3 miles away.
That's
and it's
awesome.
he's like almost like having another. I know lots of people say that about the dog. Always, he's like another human, but he, you know, he is.
Yeah,
he's very very playful. He was very very hard work in the beginning, extremely hard work. And it was just because I suppose I had time and the way that I was living that it worked for me, but it wouldn't work for a lot of people because it takes, you know, you have to put a lot of time, you have to put a lot of love into it. And if you want a dog that you want to be domineering over, and that's not the way that I am or people should be, but if it's a dog that you want to be domineering over, like some people want to have the dog to do exactly what they say, etc., then he isn't the right dog to have. But he's a fantastic, and I'm in discussions with the breeder, who he stays with. When I go away, he stays with her. Mm-hmm. So he stays with his mother. Enya is still alive. He plays with all the other wolf dogs, and we're talking about, because I want to get another one. I want to get a friend for him, a female. And we were talking about the possibility that Wolf could be the stud. I've got to do a few, he's got to have some tests, but maybe breed from him the end of the year so I could have a daughter to carry, you know.
Carry on the legacy.
I don't have kids, so it's like my way of let's say, carrying on the line.
So that's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, he's a fantastic dog.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of people probably like that. And speaking of, because you said raw diet, I mean, obviously you also follow the carnivore diet. So, how long are you doing that? And just, you know, how is it for you, the effect? Because a lot of people speak about that, the positive effects. Even GSP started it, because there's one guy on Instagram, he does that also very well. I think he's a doctor, and he changed that as well. It's like, yeah, benefits are great. Drinks raw milk and stuff like that. So, yeah, how is it for you?
So I think a lot of people, I think perhaps the majority of people who are doing carnivore, even like the big names, they had a start point. True. I've never had a start point, because for me, everything's just been an evolving part. You know, my diet, nutrition has just been evolving. So there's no start point that I went, you know, carnivore. I've always been, I say always, but there was a period in my early 20s that I went vegetarian. I became vegetarian, not for climate change, not for any more, because
just
I wanted to test it out. And the last 6 months of that, I became vegan because I wanted to test it out a bit, and it didn't really work for me. I tried it. I did it properly, and then, you know, went back to sort of eating a heavy meat based sort of diet. And I always liked cooking. And just over the years, it's just sort of like, you know, evolved as more information has come out. Especially about, I always knew carbs were, a lot of carbs weren't that good for you. I knew like the sugar, you know, the processed foods, etc. You know, etc. And you know, even as a kid, you know, I always liked eating meat. I felt strong. Uh-huh. You know this. You know, and again, like in my 20s, you know, when I used to have like steak for breakfast. You know, steak and eggs for breakfast, it was, you know, shit, I feel really, really strong. And if I didn't have that and I had something else, like a croissant or like toast or the normal type of, even if it's the fantastic, most blessed by the Dalai Lama sourdough with it's like, I still feel shit after it. But I never felt, I got that instant feeling of just like, oh, this is really, really tasty and yummy and what have you. But then after, you know, when I, you know, in the early days of me skiing and teaching and having, you know, having big breakfasts of oatmeal and I used to make these flapjacks. I mean, they were really, really good. You know, with oats and nuts and honey and maple syrup, and they were baked. And I'd bake a whole tray. And I'd eat the whole tray in the evening. In the thing, but I'm going to burn it off in the morning and all this. Wake up in the morning, oatmeal and stuff like that. And by the time I left my house to get to the lift station, I'd always have to have things like a mint tea, because my stomach was just all over the place. This isn't right. You know, everyone's going on about this oatmeal. Yeah, you've got to fuel the day and everything. But I felt shit. I felt tired. Yeah. And so I think really all that started to go probably, I can't remember the time, but I suppose it was like the late 90s, early 2000s, when the Atkins diet were starting to become sort of like more, you know, more prominent, and also sort of like to a degree, you know, keto. And it was, and because then there was like, it was almost, this is some direction here, but I'll try, you know, I'll try this.
Uh-huh.
And it was really just from that, because one, I felt better. One, eating like that made me feel much better. And then that, you know, that evolved. And then I started playing around with, what people call it, like, you know, intermittent fasting, but, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
But, you know, fasting longer, or not eating breakfast. People have a lot, and there's lots of names for it, but, you know, for it now.
That's
but
true,
I was doing this like 20 years ago, thinking like, I feel better not having breakfast.
Yeah.
And I was still fighting myself, thinking, mm-hmm. No, it's better to have, you've got to eat, Mike, you've got to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
But I felt better. And also, like, being brought up in a family when there was food relationship problems,
mm-hmm.
sister, or mother, you know, and all that things. So,
yeah,
so
yeah.
You've got all this shit information and programming that you're trying to sort of like batter your way through to get to the truth. And so really from then. But I'm not sort of dogmatic with
yeah.
You know, with any of it. All I know is that what I do works really, really well for me. High prioritizing protein.
Yeah.
You know, don't eat vegetables. Don't eat fruit. But I would have a piece of fruit. If there was a nice piece of fruit, I'd have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure.
The problem is, it's like, it's really hard to get a good piece of, you know, a good piece of fruit, like a good strawberry that actually tastes like a strawberry.
Yeah, that's true. That's awesome.
But
do you eat blueberries? Because I know a lot of carnivore diet people, they eat berries, like, or avocado, stuff like that.
Well, I used to live in the mountains, and, you know, in the autumn, the mountainside just goes like red because it's just full of blueberries.
Yeah.
I never really, you know, and I'd pick them. You'd have this special sort of tool, like with the comb. It had fingers here
yeah.
to take. Now and then, you'd get some that were sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the UK we have lots of blackberries
yeah.
you know, in what's called like the hedgerows, and it's
mm-hmm.
funny because I was walking the other day with a dog, and you know they're coming out. You know, I picked one, put it in. It looked ripe, spat it out. No, like, sweet. Picks another one. Like, saw this. Anyway, so I was walking. The dog was walking back, and there was this guy picking them. And I said to him, "I said, have you found?" "Have you found the sweet ones?" He said, "No, I don't care because I'm going to make a pie, so loads of sugar's going to go onto it." And
yeah.
and that is exactly like the. It's like that's the point. It's, you know, you find them in the wild.
Yeah.
You may find some that are sweet, but generally they're not. You know,
yeah,
wild
yeah.
strawberries, the same wild raspberries. You know, you'll see some hedgerow apples that have a little bit of sweetness, but generally, like, they're sour. So even
so,
in
for
the
you,
wild,
basically, if you would find, like you said, piece of fruit that's good, that's sweet, obviously you would eat it, but it's very rare that you
but it's, but,
find
you know, but it, you know, but it's very. I was just in Greece for a week.
Mm.
I've been back a week. And there's fantastic produce over there, you know. And I stay with some friends, and they have a beautiful house overlooking the sea. You know, it's a paradise. You know, and they would have fruit every day. For breakfast, you can get fantastic yogurt there.
Greek yogurt, it's good.
From if anyone goes, get the yogurt from Naxos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, It's off the scale, and the yogurt's fantastic. So I have a piece of fruit, and it's like I couldn't eat it because it's like there's no, you know. So to make it sweet, you put sugar, or you have to put a load of honey. The honey that they get is absolutely delicious, but
yeah.
you know, a half a teaspoon for me is almost like enough.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
sure.
I think just over years of doing living like this, I've got some amount of control where I'm not just going to
yeah.
be, you know, like the bear puts a hand in the honey
yeah.
pot, you know, so, you know,
yeah,
starts,
yeah.
you know, it starts, you know, for that, but the yogurts and so fruit is, You know, if I don't eat another piece of fruit for the rest of my life, I'm not that. I feel sometimes like that's a bit sad, but I don't really care. And the same with vegetables. You know, if someone makes it and it's really, really nice, and you know they invite me to dinner, then I'll have it. I mean, I've got a friend of mine, very, very good friend of mine. He has one of the best restaurants in the UK. He's a 2-star Michelin chef, and every now he invites me up, so I go up there, you know, and I have the dinner. I eat everything. I mean, I'm not going to he knows exactly what I do. He know, you know, yeah, he sends me pictures of every day that he's making steak and caviar for himself.
The best food.
he knows exactly what I'm doing, but I just eat it. I don't, you know, it's like I eat it and that's it. I enjoy it because it's a great experience.
Yeah,
but
sure.
But that's a one-off.
Yeah, I understand. Like, probably like if you calculate it 350 days a year, probably you don't eat like that, and then you have these couple of days where you eat the vegetable or you eat the grapefruit, what you get. So yeah.
Yeah. So. But it's not, yeah. To me, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, it's over the years you establish the control, and I mean, it works for you, and if you're good and healthy, that's definitely perfect. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say? Maybe some last advices or something you want to promote?
Not really. I mean, the thing that I, you know, the things that I'm doing, I'm running carnivore retreats. So the next retreat, which is fully booked, is in October. And this is in the Scottish Highlands, a former hunting lodge. So I do all the cooking. We just eat loads and loads of meat of fantastic, the best quality that I can get. We train, we go out and hiking. Teach everyone some breath work, teach them the rudiments of good form with training. So that's one of the things that I'm trying to build up for next year. And I also run an accountability group on a subscription based accountability group on Facebook. And that's really not, I'm not giving anyone programs, but it's about how people can try to build consistency with whatever they're doing, whether it's training, whether it's meditation, whether it's eating in a similar way to me, and do it not just for one day. We can all do things for one day. We can all do something for a week.
But consistent.
But to build up layer upon layer how we can do something today, in a year's time, in 2 years' time. And that's, I suppose, one of my skills is that, and I don't even know if it's a skill or not, but I know about consistency.
Yeah.
I know about how doing stuff, you know, for one day, for 2 days, for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, for 4 years, for 10 years, you know, day in, day out. So I That's try awesome. To pass on that bit of knowledge and experience that I've gained, over the years.
Yeah. No, it's definitely awesome what you do. I really like your content and the way you do things with a lot of consistency and discipline. I think the world definitely needs more of that, many more people. But then again, I always think like that. That's perfect as well, because that makes guys like you special, because most people, as hard as it sounds, will always be average in this world for all these reasons. And there's always specific people like you. When they want something, when they have specific goals, they will do it consistently and they will achieve it.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems that we have is that people can get things in a day, or they expect to get things
everything
in a day. Like, you could become a coach, you know, you look around there,
just
there
one day.
Coaching in one day, black belt in one day. You can have anything in one day. People don't want to make that sacrifice of learning,
to work,
taking time, you know, and whatever it is, or being on a diet for a week, it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, I've done carnivore for 3 days. I haven't lost any weight. Yeah. I've been like training for, you know, a week. I haven't built up any muscle.
Yeah.
I've done breathing for 4 days, but I don't feel any calmer. It's like people's expectations are so
short. True. Especially in the world now.
Yeah. People want instant gratification. And if they don't get it, then it's like, oh, fuck that. Doesn't work.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But yeah, I really appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much for your time. I
You're
hope we can
welcome.
do many more podcasts in the future.
You're welcome.
And have
Cool.
a great day, everybody, and see you soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye from England.
That's it from the Martial Arts Show 2.0. I'm your podcast host, Khalid, and my guest today is Michael Mason, and we talked about his journey into fitness, health, his training routine, the carnivore diet, eating meat, getting stronger, bodyguard experience, martial arts, and many more things. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow him on Instagram. If you want to know more about the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, and all available platforms, just type in the Martial Arts Show 2.0 and you will find me there. Thank you for the support. Until next time, bye everybody.